You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Content warning. Nerd Bliss is intended for a mature audience.
June 8th, 1984. It was the era of New Wave, questionable fashion, and Miami Vice. A supernatural comedy film written by Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis and directed by Ivan Reitman burst onto the scene and dominated the pop culture. The t-shirts were everywhere. The theme song was in constant rotation on popular radio. The film struck a perfect chord for its era, earning positive reviews and making over $145 million over a seven-week box office domination. To say that Ghostbusters has a special place in the hearts of a generation would be an understatement. Fast forward to 2021. After a failed attempt to reboot the franchise in 2016, the Ghostbusters generation wanted a movie that recaptured the magic of the original. With Harold Ramis and Ivan Reitman no longer with us, the bar was set high for a direct sequel. Did Ghostbusters Afterlife trap the spirit of the original 37 years later? This is our topic on episode 152 of Nerd Bliss.
Standing by to launch.
Connect, interlock.
Title turn,
connected.
Fire,
and
power.
Reactor attacks in
upper
power.
All stations. Ready.
Nerdless.
It's now online.
To kill him right there.
This is the way.
Port navigation locked. Engaging hyperdrive in 3, 2, 1.
We're ready to talk about Ghostbusters Afterlife.
I think it's what we have the most to say about. Yep. We have opinions.
Mostly good.
Okay. So I guess, yeah, I'm about to say I'm pretty sure we all really, really liked it.
Yep.
I had one friend online say that it was worth waiting the 39 years for.
I agree.
I would agree.
Yeah. I have to say, honestly, and I know this might be blasphemous, but I think it very well may be my favorite Ghostbusters movie now.
You know, I hadn't really thought about it in that context, but that's a good point.
Well, there's a lot of problematic things with the first one, so yeah.
Well, yeah, and this not all it fleshes out some things. It takes a slightly different grasp on more the social stuff than anything, but it seems to have all the elements firing on all cylinders.
Yep, most definitely. And at least Dr. Venkman does get a little bit of he receives a little bit of payback for his previous ways.
Yeah,
a little bit. Yeah. Now Heath, tell me, you know, because I asked, because Eric saw it with us as well, and I asked him, and I'll ask you, when Sigourney Weaver's name came up in the credits, did you go, wait, what?
Yeah,
right before that scene.
Where the fuck is she? they only mentioned Zool. I don't. They mentioned Dana, I think, one time, but it's like I don't remember. It's like, what did I miss? It's like I didn't go to the bathroom. I sat there the whole time. So, yeah. But then
that was perfectly orchestrated.
Was
yeah.
Oh yeah. I thought that was, and again, that opens up to me that there's a possibility. I mean, she's got such a good dry sense of humor herself. She's a good foil for Bill Murray, I think. And I'm glad to see that arrangement is still working for them.
I hope they're moving quick on a follow-up. Sorry, go ahead. You said especially.
I was just going to say, especially since she's the one with her hand on the buzzer now. And I think that was metaphorical for a few things. So I'm good with that.
And you did stay all the way to the end, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course.
Okay. So before we get into the actual movie itself, so they're back in New York now. Mm-hmm. Presumably in the old firehouse again.
Which I thought they said earlier in the film was a Starbucks now. So
Starbucks, yeah.
But it looked like it was completely untouched from, you know, the 80s or 90s. So what was up?
Yeah, I caught that too.
I think probably just a sarcastic quip.
Maybe.
I mean, we don't want to, like, technically it could have been one of those Starbucks that, like, when they downsized franchises that were too close to each other, it closed. But I think, you know, sarcastic quip would probably be a better.
Yeah, I would rest on that one.
Less complicated answer.
Now, the question is, though, do you guys think that is Winston going to be is he going to be the sole benefactor of the new Ghostbusters going forward? And is he going to open franchises like Starbucks, except for obviously not as many? But do you think that's going to be Ghostbusters Inc. is going to be like the new thing? Do you think we're going to start seeing different teams and bigger teams and whatever?
This is my theory. Do you remember in the later seasons of the A-Team when we had Robert Vaughn and he was kind of behind the scenes on all of their, on the missions they would go on? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I wish I could think of a better example, but that's the only one I can think of where, yes, Winston will be there, but again, he's going to be the back end, the bankroll. He's going to be the plausible deniability.
He's going to be the Devon to Knight Industries. He's going to be the Charlie to the Angels.
Yes. There you go. There you go. But if we got to get the kids to New York now, and we don't have Egon, so somebody has to figure out how to work that containment grid. I'm going to guess that's going to be Phoebe.
That would be perfect.
Got to be, yeah.
I mean, she seems to have this just intrinsic knowledge of all this stuff anyway. I mean, she's obviously a super bright kid. I love how the fact that she and Paul Rudd's character blended so well, like just effortlessly, kind of like he goes from being, you know, reluctant teacher to, oh, cool, check this out. And it's like, and it's just like, they're like buddies from like 5 minutes in. And it's just like that. I think that is it speaks loads of not only her maturity, but his natural, I guess, playfulness and being able to accept a kid as, you know, a person. And I think that was kind of Phoebe's struggle the whole time, was that, you know, she was a kid, so it's hard to be taken seriously when you're just a kid. But when you're a kid who could do some pretty phenomenal shit, hey, you know, you're now a hero. And these kids, even blundering and having things go wrong, they still manage to, you know, they still manage to get the job done. And I just thought that was, I think it made me feel like it's like if the Goonies were Ghostbusters. It's like, okay, you've got each kid has their own little thing that they're good at, or that they're, you know, that's their particular speciality. Kind of like the original Ghostbusters. They all sort of had their own, you know, forte. And I think these kids are going to develop their own fortes as well. And I think that's going to be a basis for the next generation, which is going to be kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. They had to, if they were going to do this, they had to go with like super young cast to keep this thing going. And of course they did. And they chose well. I at no point did I dislike the acting or the characters of anyone involved.
Yeah.
I was surprised, honestly, at how well they pulled it off. I expected going in to be disappointed in something, and I just wasn't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's why I said it had all the elements. It had the comedy, the heart. It had the scare factor. It had the sci-fi. It had everything everything that, honestly, if you're a person who kind of can appreciate the greater Ghostbusters mythos outside of just Ghostbusters 1 and 2, especially if you at least read the premise of the video game that was out a few years ago, which I need to get it because it kind of serves as an unofficial sort of Ghostbusters 3, because it's a storyline that I think was adapted and then turned into a video game. But it's like it all comes together so well, and that movie did a great job of just cementing all the Easter eggs and shit that were in there, and just all the throwback to the nostalgia without being too, you know, right, schlocky about it.
Right. And I love that Phoebe was able to figure out with her grandfather's help how to fix the proton pack.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was when they took it out and tested it, that was phenomenal. I love that scene so much.
Well, when she said, what was it? She said, would you power me up or something like that? It was a direct, I mean, it was exactly what one of the guys had said in the first movie. Like, I can't remember how she told, but she told.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it was like a direct. I mean, it was just, and it's kind of cool seeing a younger person, especially somebody who's oversized by this thing, you know, and just doing all she can to hold it up and then just blasting the shit out of stuff. That was really cool. And of course, I'm a big fan of hers anyway. And I think she's on, you know, she's been on like Young Sheldon and stuff. So she's already, as far as I was concerned, she's like Millie Bobby Brown. She's got so much career ahead of her, and she's going to be such a badass. That's where, and I'm so glad to see. And even Finn Wolfhard, I mean, he's obviously a good actor. He's been, you know, I can't remember the horror movie he was in, but I know he being on Stranger Things. I mean, his character on Stranger Things has always been so good that, I mean, just seeing him, I mean, he's a believable kid actor. I mean, he does a splendid job. So I think all the kids were just as good as the adults. And you can't say that a lot of times. I mean, you see, you know, it becomes like a Home Alone situation, but these kids nailed it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, I was, you know, the fact that they went into the old mine and looked at the old, you know, there was a part of me that went, okay, that's not as realistic as it could be, but that they could, you know, play around in an old mine shaft like that.
Well, there's fuck all to do in a small town like that.
Right.
I mean, what else are you going
to
do?
The only trouble to get into, yeah.
So I do have a timeline problem. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead with that.
So the mom, the actress was born in 81, which checks out as far as like her son's 15. You know, the events in New York were 84.
Right.
She knew her father. She fucking knew her father. Okay. This whole I never met him shtick, it's bullshit. So there's...
I don't know. There's still some plausibility to that, because think about it. Okay, Egon... I mean, what if Egon didn't know about his daughter till later on? What if, as somebody who's seen that happen before, I mean, there's always a possibility... You know, Egon could have had a thing and then not been told about it, or you know, especially when, especially when he's this wacko who makes these inventions to chase spirits around. Do you really want your child? You know, I mean, the mom might have been trying to protect the kid from that. You know, you never know.
Yeah, but I don't know that they'll address it in the next movie, but. In a way, like, because it's still like not okay that he left and abandoned her and had pictures. Like, that doesn't fucking fix it. And then like it ends up being weird because we all love Harold Ramis. He was a wonderful, wonderful man. And obviously, like, you have that like, oh, he did love them feeling at the end, but there's more to that. Well, and that she is just, she's saying that to make it easier and like emotionally disconnect. But she knew him. Well, she absolutely did.
And let's think of the mama bear thing for her towards her kids. There's also that, I mean, especially when you have, you know, Phoebe, who is every bit her grandfather. I mean, there isn't,
right.
I mean,
right.
you could not have picked a better kid to carry on the torch of Egon fucking Spengler. And what if it was her mom's way of distancing her from grandpa's experiments so that she doesn't wind up in that same, you know, getting made fun of by the locals and putting herself at risk with playing with all these dangerous, you know, pieces of equipment and, you know, all these science experiments and stuff. So, I mean, yeah, I agree. I do hope that they get a little further into it because it's obvious that Egon cared about his daughter because he had all these mementos and all these pictures and all this stuff that would lend to the fact that, yeah, he did care. So what was going on and where did they have a falling out? Will that be a rift between mom and the two kids if they find out that mom did know grandpa and just didn't really want to bring him around, whatever? So
they move back to New York and potentially grandma's there, whoever that
which maybe. we know it's not
Janine.
Right.
Well, we know yeah. Egon,
I mean, that would be my
we
ship.
Know that but Egon and Janine did get back together, apparently, because we had the coins, the tokens. We had the, and I didn't look that up because I was like, what the fuck? Because last we saw, Janine was with Lewis, but apparently that fell apart and she ended up,
right.
You know, at least being a consort or companion with Egon if they never got married or anything, but at least they were friendly for years to come. So
now was the coin in the second movie, I'm presuming, or was that like deleted scene? Okay. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yeah. So that I did look that up too. Cause I knew that wasn't in the movie. I just didn't know where it was from. And yeah, I looked it up and it said it was actually in a deleted scene. And I thought that was cool. I thought that was neat. You can take footage like that and apply it and make it relevant. And I thought that was, which that whole movie did such a good job of making that old stuff relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's right. What got me.
Well, and so interesting that like today's kids don't really care about that actual real thing that happened in New York 30 years ago. Like, that's so realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and when we factor in the fact that we have, I mean, look at reintroducing Gozer, look at reintroducing the Keymaster and the Gatekeeper, and I mean, we're looking at all these things. I mean, how were they? You know, it's like we didn't see. I mean, we heard them talking about this stuff in the first movie, and even the second movie. You know, references to Tobin's Spirit Guide, reference to Evo Shandor. We heard all this stuff, but we didn't. I mean, the fact that again, some of this was addressed in the video game too, and the fact that they're just compiling all this shit into this universe. It's almost, it brings you to some of your other franchises like Star Trek and Star Wars and stuff, where they're taking these prequel era stuff and they're taking the original run and this new stuff, and they're finding these ways to interweave it all in such a way that it really does, it's gonna start making sense. So I mean, and they can, and not only can they move forward, but they can also revisit, and it's like you don't feel like it's a linear time thing. It's like it's kind of like it's always a threat.
Hi everyone, it's Nathan, host of the 42cast. Our second season is just underway, and it's never been a better time to check in on what we're doing. Whether it's talking about the latest movies from the MCU, watching the Arrowverse shows, talking about classics such as Star Trek and Doctor Who, playing 8-bit video games, or sharing celebrity interviews, the 42cast has something for everyone. So give it a listen, and discover why it's the ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything. The 42Cast is a proud member of the ESO Network.
Hello, I am the monster of the Monster Sci-Fi Show. You may be confused, but I am the superior version of the monster, and not just some variant. Much like me, this podcast is burdened with glorious purpose. I'm here to say this podcast delivers timely sci-fi and pop culture news plus movie and TV commentary reviews. In the end, is this not simpler? Subscribe to the Monster Sci-Fi Show. It's sci-fi. From a certain point of view, the Monster Sci-Fi Show is part of the ESO Network.
Let's talk about podcast a little bit, because that kind of hits close to home for me. But
because he's a brony.
Yeah, the podcasting. I love that. Yeah, the little flash drive of you of Rainbow Dash was a nice touch. I think. And he is a good stand-in for our Ray stance, I think. Being the believer in the supernatural. But yeah. Anyway, Eric, did you have any thoughts?
Well, I haven't really broken it down quite as detailed as y'all have. I've seen it, but I remember going in thinking, you know, Ghostbusters Afterlife, the title alone indicates it's a sequel, and I was expecting that, and it was. But you sit there and you watch it, and you notice little areas where it parallels the original story pretty closely. So eventually it's, you kind of almost, but not quite, are seeing the first Ghostbusters, but you're not, if that makes any sense.
That's a good point. That's a good point. There were some moments early on where I don't want to say it was slow, but it was, I was really, really eager to
wondering
to get where we were going to certain things.
Yeah. Wondering where we're going.
Yeah. Something I was going to point out also was for the three or four people who still have not seen it yet, go in, sit down, get comfortable for about 30 minutes, because there's a pretty good amount of setup before everything starts kicking off.
Yes. I think that's a fair statement. And stay all the way to the end.
And beyond. And yes. Yeah, and I was going to say, I think the initial buildup was a little slow, but I do like the way we were introduced to the beginning with who we could only assume was Egon. You know, I mean, we didn't know at that point, was this for real him? I mean, it makes sense. It kind of, he's doing Egon stuff, but we don't see him. We're only seeing the back of his head, or we're seeing some, you know, symbol, or silhouette. We're not seeing him. So we can only assume. And again, when he was taken through the chair by the arms, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, he's dead. And we're like, that was like Dana. Remember when Dana had the arms come out of the chair in the first movie? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a parallel there. Mm-hmm. And I like how they're still using the little pink, glowy shooting stars as that represents the spirits traveling. And I think those little nods to the original series or the original movie was, I mean, to me, that made it feel at home. And then again, later on, when we're starting to see evidence that Egon's still there, like the stack of books. Did you notice how the books were stacked?
Yes.
And remember in the first movie, yes. It says, nobody stacks books like that or something like that. And it's like Egon's fucking with you the whole time. And all these like little Easter eggs, you can tell something's not quite right. And somebody's still here. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. I might have teared up at the end when I saw the ghost hand reach down and help Phoebe's arm up. Mm. And I'm like, holy shit, that's fucking Egon. Mm. And I like lost it. I was like, I'm not crying. You're crying. So
Yeah.
Somebody coming in the theater and cutting onions. It's bullshit.
Yeah, I was sort of expecting something like that, and still, it was still quite an emotional impact.
I mean, how could it not be? Especially knowing how much of his heart and soul went into this series, and he was the co-creator, and he's not with us anymore. But you know what? For that, especially that last act when he's there, he's looking on his family with admiration. He's straightening up, the kid's collar. He's, hugging. I mean, it's just like, that shit was real. And for that little bit, fucking Egon Spengler was there. And I like the fact that he didn't speak. I like the fact that they didn't try to emulate his voice, but they did. But I'm going to tell you, I looked hard at that, at that CGI, and that was some damn good recreation right there.
Yeah, the fact that he was a ghost kind of gave them a way to cover up any imperfections in the deep fake, I guess.
Yeah.
So there was that, and again, like you, the fact that he didn't say anything was itself, appropriate and impactful. God, what else was I going to say? Oh,
because he spoke with his looks, he spoke with his gestures, and you couldn't have said anything better than that.
And as you say, the hug at the end, where he kind of floats off into the ether, which I am assuming that meant he crossed over, so to speak.
Yeah,
because his business was finished, to reference the old Casper movie. Your unfinished business is done, so you get to cross over.
Yeah.
But the one question I have in all of that, with the reveal of Egon as a ghost, how did he not get sucked into the traps?
Yeah, I didn't think about that. It's like, how maybe there was, and maybe he knew something, and maybe that's something that we will learn in the next movie. Maybe there was something that he intrinsically knew that would keep him from, maybe because he was a different type of spirit. Maybe because he was, could there be something about his death that was different? Or is there something about his spirit that was just different than all the rest of them? I don't know.
My main theory is that because he was not directly above the traps, but again, those traps were pulling spirits out of the sky. I don't know. I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but if you have any thoughts on that, give us a call on the call-in line, please.
Most of your ghosts in Ghostbusters are not like humanoid form. They're like almost the corrupt, mischievous parts. So I guess like a pure person that has good intentions is not really a ghost in Ghostbusters.
They're class 5 free roaming vapors. I can't really, real nasty ones, too.
I can't really think of any ghost in the series that took a regular humanoid form. They all had some kind of distortion about them or some sort of exaggeration. They were all, like you said, maybe an enhancement of whatever their worst or most notable traits were, but there was no just direct straight carbon copy of their living form like Egon. Egon definitely stood out in that regard.
Right. The closest they came, I think, was the librarian. But she turned into something horrific. Yeah.
As librarians do.
Yeah. Well, she did say shh.
Yeah.
And what do you think about the reimagined or reconstituted Gozer?
I love that. I was sort of not expecting Gozer to be our main villain, even though I recognized the Gozer hounds in the trailer.
Yeah. Which those were done great. I mean, the yes. fact that, you know, Vince Clortho is still the klutzy one and like still, you know, trying. I mean, Vince Clortho is like releasing the dog on the linoleum floor. And whereas Zool is the more serious or the more, you know, held back, restrained one. And I thought it was perfect that Paul Rudd got to be Vince Clortho because, I mean, he was the kind of goofy comic relief and like Lewis was in a way. So I thought that was a good match.
He did so good with the weird body language. Yeah. So good.
Now, help me with something here between Zool and Vince Clortho. Because at the moment they meet, of course, you know, Vince says, "I like your eyes." And she said something in response. I've seen the movie twice now, and I still can't make out what she's saying, if anything.
I think she was speaking in their, like, ancient tongue.
Yeah,
like, she was not speaking English.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that works. And when she when she stripped into her fancy duds, I was kind of halfway expecting Paul Rudd to do the same thing. But, you know, was he going to be wearing a tuxedo or?
You look awesome in that dress.
Or at least a matching jumpsuit. I mean, I'm just thinking, right, you know, at the very least.
Toga or something. Yeah.
I mean,
you know, I gotta say the marshmallows did not disappoint.
Oh, no, that was hilarious. I love
those little fuckers.
And I love the fact at the end when the kid's frying them in the car and then he's like comes out all covered in the goo, you know. Oh, yeah, I've been there before.
They were so excited to see the Ghostbusters, too.
Yeah.
The little ones that were on the dash of the car were like, yes. So, I mean, they're not evil. They're like chaotic.
Yeah, yeah, that was as far as seeing Gozer again. When Winston says, "I think she remembers us."
Yeah.
I wasn't that was the plot point that I didn't anticipate. I'm like, oh wow, that would be, yeah. And of course she did uncross the streams, so clearly she did remember them.
So she did remember. at least they answered the question right this time though.
Yes.
Are you a god?
I guess the only thing that was really missing is choosing the form of the destructor, which, you know, I can only imagine. Rainbow Dash, giant Rainbow Dash.
That'd be awful.
Oh, goodness. Sorry. But, so yeah, enjoyed the movie, looking forward to whatever they do with it going forward.
Do you think we're going to see enhancements to the old Ecto One, or do you think we're going to see a new Ecto mobile, or do you think we're going to see additional Ectos? One of the things that I liked was I love seeing the gunner seat, like that was in the video game, I believe. And I want to say it was in like one episode of the Real Ghostbusters cartoon or something. There was something I've seen that gunner seat before. Mm. And I think the fact that they included that was just fucking awesome. And it made it work.
I'm wondering if it was like a part of the toy that they did for the cartoon. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah, either way, that was a nice touch. You mentioned the Ecto-1, what they're going to do with it. That's a good question.
I mean, she's seen better days.
I think most definitely. Most definitely. But with Winston bankrolling it, and he seems to be invested in getting her fixed up. If he has advisement from Phoebe on what it needs and what could be added, who knows? We could get a Knight Rider 2.0 thing going on.
Yeah, I was thinking that, or the you know, what's the next thing you could do? Okay, we could do what the DeLorean did in Back to the Future, you know, wheels fold under,
yeah, make it fly.
Just saying. Yeah.
I wouldn't hate that. I gotta be honest.
There's not because there's not really a modern counterpart to that car that you could, that would look cool. I mean, I've seen some of the local factions and, you know, some of the cosplay Ghostbusters. I saw one did an early 2000s Dodge Magnum, which is like it looks almost like the Charger up front, but it's a station wagon. And I saw one of those done up, and I'm like, you could almost pull that off, but you know, there's not really anything modern right now that would pull that off, I think, and get the job done. And you almost want that. It's kind of like a Battlestar Galactica reboot series where you almost want it to stay the older car, because if it was a newer car with all the computer stuff in it, like what the Cylons did with the Vipers, you know, they knock them out with an EMP blast. You know, whereas the old Vipers that didn't have all the fancy shit could still fly. Well, what if they did the same thing with Ecto-1, this old thing with a carburetor and, you know, and old school, you know, V8 engine and all that. I mean, you know, it's got less stuff that can go wrong with it. It's got no computer stuff. So, hey, let's just keep this thing simple and keep it running. But let's soup the fuck out of it.
I am a little sad that we didn't get to see what all the stuff on top of Ecto-1 does. Because presumably I remember
we've always seen all that kibble up there, but yeah, I don't think they've ever really done anything on it.
The only thing I remember ever seeing, now this is going to take you way back. There was a game for the Commodore 128 computer, Ghostbusters game, and one of the artifacts you could use was on top. It was one of the bits on top of Ecto-1. It was supposedly what they called a ghost vacuum. But
that would be cool.
I don't think that's canon. So
it should be.
Well, I will often say the only thing I care about is my head canon. That's it. Not even worried about, regardless of what universe it is.
Do you have any headcanons that you wanted to share?
I mean, I think my major thing is just that there's more going on with the mom and her relationship with Egon than she admits.
Yep. It's going to be interesting to see. Honestly, I'm interested to see how they get back to New York or how they, because we have at least one. No, we have two Ghostbusters that are from, was it Oklahoma that they lived in?
I think it was
Oklahoma. The town was in Oklahoma. So two of them are from that little town. So they would have to up and move.
Well, she's old enough, but podcast isn't.
Yeah.
I guess he could just Skype in or whatever.
Tag along for the summer, maybe. Don't know. We'll see what, I mean, presumably, I think it's Jason Reitman. That's Ivan Reitman's son that handled all this. We'll let him call in.
I'm sure he has a plan.
Well, you know, one of the things too, that I read was that originally one character that was intended to be in the story was Dana's son, Oscar.
Yeah. I did mention that. Remember that Dana has a son.
Who would be just younger than
Paul Rudd,
than Egon's daughter. Yeah.
So, I mean, if you thought if that somehow, I mean, who knows? We could have a new scene, you know, somehow some senior, he could be a senior member of the new team or whatever. And, or he could, who knows? I mean, he may be able to play, the straight guy to Paul Rudd's comedic effect. I mean, you just never know. I mean, I think that there's so much that could go on there. But yeah, originally, I think Dana's son was supposed to be a character in the movie. And I don't know exactly what happened with that.
He could definitely be a plot point in whatever they have coming next. Like, he could even be like the vector for the villain in the next movie, conceivably. Like, if we wanted to. I think it might be a little too corny to make it Vigo that comes back, but you know, that would be the one villain that he's been exposed to. Who knows?
Well, and And then let's not forget that we haven't seen Slimer. Of course, I recall in the second movie, Slimer was a little more of a just background kind of hanging out character, much like in the cartoon series and stuff. So where was Slimer now? I mean, was he trapped and put back in the containment, or is he wandering around somewhere? I mean, what's up with him?
Yeah, I imagine because he must be wandering around somewhere. I don't think they would have trapped him again. But I guess anything's possible.
Maybe he's still hanging out there at the firehouse, for all we know.
Well, didn't we kind of have Slimer in the 2016 movie, and he kind of had like a chick with him, and
yeah, we did.
Yeah. Hey, hate to be the one to bring up that movie. I know it's controversial.
I don't think it's controversial.
We still appreciate it.
I was going to say, I still watch it and laugh. And I think that's the biggest thing. I honestly do not think it was a badly written movie. I don't think it was a badly presented team. I think that it was not given a fair shot by a lot of so-called fans. But, you know, we know how we feel about that sort of thing.
Yeah,
it took a lot more of the comedy track than this one. Afterlife is not like it. Comedy is secondary to everything else.
Yeah.
You know, it's more an adventure.
It's a family adventure.
Sci-fi, yeah, type of, right, movie, which I think is what, like, it's what people who were kids when Ghostbusters came out, that's what we all got out of it, was the adventure and sci-fi part. But like, it was made as a comedy, right. Like it, with a lot of creepy Bill Murray saying inappropriate things to women. That's what it was made for.
Yeah. We can't really get around that. And he doubled down in the second movie too.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel bad for having such a strong negative reaction to Bill Murray, but.
Well, I mean, we got to remember Bill Murray also was a product of his time.
Right.
And I know that's not necessarily an excuse, but look at any of the movies that especially Bill Murray was in. Stripes with Harold Ramis. Let's look at, I think even Groundhog Day. You know, there were all these different levels of cringe going on, but it seems like Dan Aykroyd always was a little more neutral about things. I mean, he didn't seem to, he, John Candy, some of the other folks involved from that era of comedian, they were a little more, I think, responsible with some of the stuff. I think Bill was written a certain way because Bill pulled it off so well. You know, I don't know how he really is. I mean, I've heard mixed stories about him as a person, so it's hard for me to say, you know, he's one way or the other, but I will say that, you know, again, I think these sequels to Ghostbusters will have a great opportunity to put Peter Venkman in his place. And I think that's what they were trying to do in some places. You know, I think that's
most definitely,
that'd be a great, I think that'd be a great ongoing gag to just, let's make Peter uncomfortable.
But I was just going to say, you know, the sexual cavalier is a trope of the 80s. I mean, you see it in all the TV shows and sitcoms.
Oh my God,
time.
Cheers.
Yeah, Cheers.
Night Court.
Freaking Dan Fielding from Night Court. Exactly. So as you say, product of the time.
And it is skeevy, yeah, and it is sleazy. And I have watched episodes of, I went back and watched the whole series, Cheers, and a couple other things, and I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, everybody on this fucking show is trash. It's like, there's not a redeemable fucking human being except for maybe Coach. And later on, Woody Harrelson's character was so such a male ingenue that he just didn't know what the hell was going on. And I'm thinking, you know, those were the only wholesome or like admirable characters on the whole fucking show. Everybody else is so terrible. And, but again, they still brought us laughs, and they still, and we also know that a lot of those folks are not that in person. We know Ted Danson's a lot. I mean, he's had some faux pas here and there, but he's a lot more, not cooler individual than I think, he got a chance to play. I liked him in Good Place. I think that was more genuine Ted Danson than Sam Malone ever was. But, you know, we see that a lot, though. And we see, I mean, that happened in movies, that happened in TV. Yeah, it was, I mean, it happened in music. I mean, look at the music of the era, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like the idea of Woody as the original himbo.
Yeah. You gotta appreciate a good himbo.
Yeah.
Nerdbliss has arrived at Somerville, Oklahoma, home of Evo Shandor. If someone asks if you are a god, say yes. Disengaging hyperdrive. Begin disembarkation protocols.
And so ends another episode of Nerdbliss. If you have any feedback on this or any other Nerdbliss episode, send us a text message or leave us a voicemail on the call-in line, which is area code 864-715-9446. That number always goes to voicemail, and depending on the content of your message, we may play it on the show. Our email address is nerdblisspod@gmail.com, and we are on all the social media platforms under the handle @nerdblisspod. All music in this recording was used with the appropriate licensing and permissions. Our theme song is a modified version of Hyperdrive by Jens Kilstofta and is licensed to us for use by Machinima Sound. Thank you once again for listening to Nerdbliss. Nerdbliss is a part of the ESO Network and a product of 4 Foot One Media.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I hate this. I like to torture them.